On today's show, a mailbag edition of Locked On Rangers, answering all of your burning questions about the deadest time of the offseason, and plenty of stuff to talk about. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked on to the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010, the founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Thank you all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. If you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. You can follow the show at Locked On Rangers. And you can subscribe on YouTube, where the best way you can help grow the show is to comment any single thing below. On today's show, I'm getting into all of your mailbag questions, normally a Monday mailbag, but silly me, forgot to put out the call for question. But y'all answer the bell, and there are quite a few really good questions here. Starting with Corey on Seager, he said, given the signing of Sebastian Walcott, where would he slide into your top 30? Now, a lot of times in years past, I have waited until every single other outlet had put out their top 30 to give out mine. But this year, I kind of felt like, you know what, it's January. It's time to go ahead and do it. Plus, the 16-year-old international signing window that was the July 2nd signing window is now the January 15th signing window. And as much as I like Theo Walcott, I think he's pretty good. There's not a whole lot of information out there. So in terms of where I would slot him in my top 30, it kind of goes into what everyone values in prospects. That's why all these top 30s are different. Sometimes it's because people value different things. Sometimes because certain people haven't gotten to see certain prospects. And that's kind of where I am on Walcott and all of the other January 15th signings that the Rangers did. I'm sure a lot of them will end up being in this top 30 fairly quickly. But again, I don't have eyes on them, so I'm not nearly as high. I mean, look at the highest guy who has not come to full season ball is Anthony Gutierrez, and I have him at 12. Baseball Prospectus, who says they haven't seen him, but they've gotten a lot of really good reports talking to scouts who have seen them, talking to the Rangers, and how they feel about Anthony Gutierrez. They are very, very high on him. I have some of the other guys in the middle range, the teens. I mean, Gutierrez is 12. Jason Morbell is 14. Glider Figueroa is 18. And there's a couple other guys that are pretty far down in the system at Daniel Cueva at 23. And I think that's it of guys who have either played like half a season stateside or less. And these guys, these January 15th signings, they have not even played any professional ball at all. All I have to go on is what MLB.com, MLB Pipeline have been writing about them, which is great reporting, but it's not enough to factor into these rankings. I'm sure their ceilings are very, very high, but I used to think sort of like AJ Preller. That was kind of how I viewed prospects, was through that lens of like, all right, whatever the ceiling is the most important thing. Floor doesn't matter. You just got to get a bunch of guys who could eventually be stars, and one of them is going to work out. And well, we kind of saw how that worked. The Rangers got a lot of guys with a lot of high ceilings, like Lewis Brinson, like Jorge Alfaro, like Joey Gallo, like Nick Williams. And not a whole lot of them hit those ceilings. Actually, none of them. Joey Gallo is the one who came closest, and he's kind of come crashing back to earth the last year and a half or so, which I think is going to end up being different. But still, as much as I like Theo Walcott, I've started valuing higher floors a whole lot more. Guys who are closer to the big leagues, I value that a whole lot more, which was, again, made it really tough to not put Josh Jung number one in this list and put Evan Carter ahead of him. But I think Evan Carter was just that much more impressive. So this is a roundabout way of saying I don't think I'd put Sebastian Walcott anywhere on my top 30 at this point in his career. Maybe by the end of the season, by next year, that's different. I don't think he's going to play much before I do a mid-season prospect re-rank in July or whatever it's going to be. But I don't know. Things could be different then. But I don't anticipate putting him on there. If I did, it'll be probably somewhere. If I had to put him on there right now, it'd probably be towards the bottom, and maybe I'd drop him in at 30 just as a kind of a, hey, here's this guy, pay attention to him. He's definitely someone to look out for, but again, these 16-year-olds, scouting them is incredibly difficult, and they are all very, very far away from the big leagues. So I, even if I redid my prospect rankings today, I might change like one or two things. I don't think I would, because it just happened 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, actually. But yeah, I don't think I would put him on my top 30, and that's not disrespect to him. It's just he's a 16-year-old, and I don't know anything about him, and very few people do. Anyway, next question comes to us from John Crabtree. He asks, why haven't the Rangers addressed their bullpen? Well, I think they're going to. I think they're going to externally. I think a lot of what their improvements were going to be internal. But with Brett Martin going down for the season, I think the talks with Matt Moore are going to heat back up. I'm kind of surprised that Moore hasn't signed a deal somewhere. I think he was looking for a multi-year deal. He's probably going to get it. He had a really, really great year. There have been a whole lot of other relievers that have come off the board, and I think that he is probably the best left-handed reliever that is left on the market. Maybe the Rangers will be more encouraged to reach back out to them. They already had a lot of lefties in their pen last year. They had, you know, Brett Martin. They had John King, not the funnest one, but they also had Matt Moore, Brock Burke, and Taylor Hearn, who were all really, really good. And that's kind of why I thought they let Matt Moore go, is because, all right, you got plenty of lefties. You got plenty of lefties who can go multiple innings, so there's not really an extreme need. I mean, he's really good, and he definitely helped this pen quite a bit last year, especially before the reinforcements got back at midseason in Jonathan Hernandez and Jose Leclerc, but they don't really need that many lefties, and I thought if they were going to get somebody, they might get a righty. They still might end up getting a righty, but I think that there was an extreme need, and there are some guys in the minor league system like Zach Kent, and I did a whole episode in December about five prospects and five free agents that the Rangers could go and sign to help their bullpen. And I think almost all of those free agents that I picked there are gone. So I'm thinking the Rangers are going to look more internally. Yeri Rodriguez, I think, will factor in pretty heavily, more so this year than he did last year. He did make his debut for a whole inning. But yeah, I think that the Rangers were kind of content with their bullpen. They needed to upgrade the rotation a whole bunch, and they did. They still, I think upgrading left field is still a higher priority than upgrading the bullpen right now. But to answer your question, I think that they thought it was fine. Now with Brett Martin going out, I think they're going to reconsider that and maybe go and look for a free agent reliever to bring in. Coming up, we're going to get into questions about the depth of the system, a buy low candidate on a mediocre team that the Rangers should consider, and a really fun question that is going to take some very deep research to answer. But first, this episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends on every professional and amateur league out there, from pro football to basketball to soccer to hopefully some preseason baseball odds pretty soon. We've got it all at betonline.net. If you love sports podcasts, then you can find those at BetOnline as well. We're always the fastest and easiest way to get your sports betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more, because BetOnline, it's where the game starts. Now, this next question comes to us from Emre Özturk. And he says, I keep hearing about the farm being one of the top/deepest, yet they don't have anyone in the top 30 prospects, which I think he means overall top 100s, guys in the top 30s, which we'll get to that in a second. But anyway, is this a case of the farm being a year away from truly being ready for its respect? I feel like with trades, it's like we're buying a TV with 10s and 20s versus dropping some big bills. Now, I think overall, you're kind of right. There's not a whole lot of Rangers that are in the highest of high, like top 100s at this point. At the midseason, top 50 for Baseball Prospectus, I think the Rangers had had someone in there. Let me just go double check this at the 2022 midseason rankings. I feel like Evan Carter. Jack Leiter was at 24 in Baseball Prospectus' top 50 midseason re-rank. I don't think he's going to be that high this year, but outside of that, they had Ezequiel Duran at 31, which I think kind of is an indication of how highly they rate him, and I feel similar to him. They also had Josh Jung at 41 at the midseason re-rank. And that's it. That's all the Rangers had. Evan Carter was at 55. And I think he might end up being in some top 30s. I don't think MLB Pipeline has released their top 100. I don't think that... I'm actually really sure that Baseball Prospectus has not released their preseason top 100. But I think that Evan Carter is one of the ones that could end up being there. Maybe Josh Jung. But all this to say, I think your point does stand about the Rangers having a lot of depth. And the reason that is not that they're, you know, a season away or whatever from getting their respect. It's just that there's not a whole lot of star potential in here. I mean, I think Evan Carter is probably going to be a star. Josh Jung could end up being a multi-time all-star. Owen White and Jack Leiter have that ceiling. They lost a little bit of luster this year. Well, not Owen White, but Jack Leiter definitely lost a little bit of luster this year. But it's more of just how deep this system is. Normally, you'll have a system, if it has 10 guys who you feel really confident are going to be everyday big league contributors, then that's a pretty good system. The Rangers right now, I'd say there are maybe 15 to 20 guys that I feel pretty darn confident are going to be contributing members of a big league team, whether that's everyday starters, whether that's impact relievers. But I think that, or it's just a guy who's kind of a fourth outfielder or just going to hold down a big league job for 5 years at least. I feel like the Rangers have 15 to maybe 20 of those. And that goes to show the depth of the system. Now, maybe some of those guys that I'm more confident on than I should be, but it kind of shows how deep this system is. There's not a future Mike Trout. There's not a Julio Rodriguez. There's not a Shohei Ohtani. I mean, players of that ilk, if you know what I mean, in this system. Evan Carter is the closest thing to it, but it's kind of like Brandon Nimmo is his ceiling, and that's a pretty good player, and that would be a really good player for the Rangers to develop. But it's not like all-star, perennial all-star MVP candidate, like just absolutely one of the best players in the game. And so that's why it makes sense for the Rangers to use more of that depth if they are, you know, paying with a whole bunch of, you know, lower bills, if you're saying buying a TV, it spends the same. It spends the same if you give a cashier $10 bills versus $100, and you have more chances for those $10 bills in this kind of metaphor that's getting off the rails, for those $10 bills to live up to their value, because you know, prospects don't always do that. So that's kind of where the Rangers stand. They should be a top five system. They don't have a top 10 prospect in all of baseball, but I do think they have a lot more top 100 guys than they should. And a whole lot of, if they did like a top 300, the Rangers have a whole lot of guys on that list. So that's kind of why you're hearing that about the Rangers system. And it kind of depends on how people view prospects. If they are more fixated on the highest ceiling guys, then they wouldn't like the Rangers system. But if they want a whole bunch of guys who they think are definitely going to be contributors in some capacity, then that's why you would like the Rangers system. So, yeah, that's where they stand on that. This next question comes to us from Christian Shipman. He asks, what do you think is a realistic window of contention for the Rangers? Everybody's expecting big things this year, and I'm hopeful, but I won't be disappointed if we don't make the playoffs this year. Now, that's a good mindset to have. It's a really, really healthy mindset to have, and I think you're right. This is a big year, and the Rangers really want to make the playoffs, and if they don't make the playoffs, there's going to be, I think, big organizational changes. You have more realistic expectations than Rangers ownership, which I wish that ownership would have those expectations. Even with spending all that big money, last year, when you're going from out of rebuild to good team, you need to have 1 year at least of, oh, fun little scrappy team. Oh, they used to suck, but they don't suck anymore, and they're going to kind of be a pain in the butt for a lot of teams. They're not quite good yet, but they're figuring some things out. Last year was supposed to be that year. 2022 was supposed to be that year, because you got Corey Seager, you got John Gray, you had some pieces, you had Marcus Semien, you had Mitch Garver. It was like, oh, okay, this team is not terrible like they were in 2021, but they were more terrible than they should have been. That last year should have been the stepping stone year, and we've seen, look through all the advanced data about like how their run differential wasn't as bad as a team with 94 losses should be, and I think it was more of a stepping stone year than outsiders think, but it still wasn't quite that. They didn't get close to 500. If this year they get above 500, that is the bare minimum goal. If they don't do that, then either things went really wrong, everybody got injured, or what would be worse is everybody stunk. And that is something that is not survivable. But I think 2024 is the window is wide open, and it's going to be 2024, 2025, 2026. Those are going to be, it's like a 3-year window that it feels like it's going to be wide open because of these free agents and they are aging, and that's how that works. And the Rangers don't have a whole lot of, like, you know, future Alex Bregmans or whatever coming through the system. They can just pop into their lineup like the Astros did when they were opening their run of like, all right, we got all these young guys who are going to be pretty cheap. And we've got a couple of veterans that have been here and have been established and pry open the window for 6-7 years, like unfortunately the Astros have done. The Rangers don't have that luxury. They have what might end up being, it might end up being a 1-year window, depending on the health of DeGrom. A lot of it is going to depend on that. Depending on how Corey Seager and Marcus Semien age, it's going to depend on that. But I think 2024 is the, all right, that's when you have to be a team that could win a championship as opposed to fun, scrappy, figuring it out, clawing their way into a second or third wildcard spot. That is the goal. But this year, winning and showing that this is a different type of team than last year and the year before, that is the goal for this year. So realistic window of contention for a title, 2024, and it needs to be a rapid improvement. I think it will be, but yeah, that is kind of my answer to that. Coming up, we're going to get into a question about a buy low pitcher and a couple other options out in left field. But first, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want all the fat and calories, then you have got to try a Built Bar. We just got through the holidays, and I know my goal is to eat a little bit healthier this year. If you're like me, you want to eat healthier, but you don't want to compromise on taste, then man, I have got just the thing for you. You have got to try Built Bar. With Built, Tasty is actually healthy for you. Seriously, they're so delicious, you won't think they're good for you. And I'm not sure how Built does it. They make it taste like a candy bar, even though it's a protein bar. And the best part is you don't have to wait around for a box anymore. For years, I've been telling you to go to built.com and order yourself a box. I mean, you can still do that. You can still do that and wait for your boxes, get exactly what you want. But you can also right now head to your nearest Walmart today or your local Sam's Club, pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, or head to your Sam's Club, grab a 13-bar box of our hit flavors, brownie batter and churro. You can thank me later. Go get yourself some Built Bars. Now, the next question comes to us from Matt, my boy, Matt McCutcheon. He asked, would you consider trading for Madison Bumgarner? He's 33. He makes $23 million this year and $14 million next year. Could he be a bounce-back candidate with Bruce Bochy? I mean, he could. He could. That is, it is a possibility, but it's not one that I think is a likely one. He is younger than I thought he was. I mean, he's 33 years old. If you look at some of his advanced numbers in Baseball Savant, it is a whole heck of a lot of blue, which the blue is bad. Everything in the bottom 10 percentile all the expected numbers, barrel rate, he's not striking anybody out. He's not getting anybody to chase. His fastball velocity is way down. He's getting hit hard. He's getting hit hard often. The only things that he has been good at is his fastball spin rate's pretty good. His extension's pretty good. And he's better at not walking guys than the average major leaguer. But the numbers have been really bad ever since he went to Arizona. Like, that is going to be one of the worst contracts. I mean, in 2020, 9 starts, 6.5 ERA. All right, pandemic year, like, it's fine. Maybe he'll figure things out. 26 starts the next year in 2021 as a 31-year-old. 4.67 ERA in 146 innings. Just like, okay, well, all right, 2022 can't be as bad, right? Wrong. It's just as bad, if not worse. 30 starts, 158 innings, and a 4.88 ERA. It's just, he has not been good. The last year in San Francisco, before the pandemic, before he signed that contract with Arizona, he had a 3.9 ERA in 207.2 innings. And this kind of continues a trend of, I guess it's just really him and Tim Lincecum, of guys being really, really good while they're in San Francisco. made four straight All-Star games from 2013 to 2016, won three rings, finished top 10 in Cy Young voting for all those 4 years, won two Silver Sluggers, got some MVP votes in 2016, won a World Series MVP, won an NLCS MVP. But yeah, I think he's washed, and I wouldn't trade assets. He had a negative 0.8 baseball reference WAR this year. And I'm not sure he's going to still be in the rotation with Arizona at the end of this year. So, yeah, I don't think I would make that trade. Maybe there's a chance that Mike Maddux could work some magic on him, but I really don't see it. Next question comes to us from Tony Lopez. He asks, which former Ranger is going to be the next to sign with the Orioles? And I think that's a really difficult question to ask. And I think that the obvious answer right now, the guy that's out there is Jerickson Profar. Maybe it's Michael Wacha, former Ranger great. I think I'm going to go with Michael Wacha. He's still out there. He's still a possibility. I don't want to say Cole Calhoun because they're smarter than to sign him there. But yeah, I think I'm going to say former Ranger great Michael Wacha is going to be the next ex-Ranger to sign in Baltimore and continue that longstanding trend of Baltimore being Rangers East. Next question comes from us from I3 or L3, I can't tell. Anyway, yes, are the Rangers going to go ahead and use internal options in left field now? In lieu of a no-brainer trade, I think I'd rather spend that extra money in the bullpen to start the season and try and sign whatever outfielders are left in free agency now. I'm tending to lean this way as well. With the Brett Martin injury, I think that changed the calculus a little bit, but there's not a whole lot of options left out there in left field. There is Jerickson Profar. There is David Peralta. Profar's market as him projected to make around $15 million a year. I don't think the Rangers do that. I would like it. I think it would be an upgrade this year. It depends on what we see from Bubba. I'm really curious to just let them start Bubba this year in left field and see how much those new rules about being able to steal a billion bases, how much that actually affects his value. Because I think it could be really, really valuable to have a guy who's playing every day, in the lineup every day. If he can get on base at a 300 to the 320, if he can really get a 320, then he starts looking like a real legitimate everyday left fielder as opposed to a bench guy. But I'm curious to see how that stacks out. And you know, David Peralta would be, he'd be fine. Just very, very uninspiring out there. But yeah, I think he'd be fine. Robbie Grossman's another guy who I think maybe you look at. I talked a little bit about some of these other end of the road options, for lack of a better term, on Monday's show. But yeah, I think bullpen help, if they do spend any more money, is probably where it's going to go, and stick with internal options because maybe Zeke Duran wins the job out of camp. Next question comes to us from Will Griswold. And he asks, what's your ideal situation for the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning relievers, especially come playoff time? And that's an interesting question. And if it was a few years ago, I might have more of a defined answer. But I think I lean towards the new age of bullpens of not necessarily having a specific this guy this inning, this guy this inning, that this is just what it is. It's playing by matchups. I think that's very, very important now. But I'm not going to just completely use that to dodge the question. I do still think the Rangers are going to go a little bit of a traditional bullpen. Bruce Bochy is kind of leaned that way, but he's not afraid to mix things up when he needs to. But I do think having semi-defined roles is going to be a thing for the Rangers this year. Jose Leclerc ended up winning the closer's role at the end of last year, and I don't see a situation where he loses it to start the year. Maybe Jonathan Hernandez looks absolutely amazing in spring training, but I think even if he does, it's going to be Leclerc's job in the ninth. Hernandez is going to pitch the eighth. And if you're looking for a guy in the seventh, well, Brock Burke. But I think Brock Burke, as the use him when you need him for multiple innings, is more of a valuable thing. If you're looking for a specific seventh inning guy, then I might lean towards, I was about to say Matt Bush, but that's not a thing. Let's say Taylor Hearn. Both of those guys are kind of more likely to be a throw him in when you need him type of guy. The Rangers do have a lot of bullpen options. Maybe it's Joe Barlow that's in that spot. Maybe it's Josh Spores or Spencer Howard. Or maybe it's Glenn Otto. I think Glenn Otto is going to be my choice there for seventh inning guy. Maybe it ends up being Corey Knable, who I think of the right-handed relief relief free agents that are there, I think he might make the most sense for the Rangers. He's a guy who I looked at way earlier in the offseason. He's projected to make, you know, $5.1 million. And for that guy, for a seventh inning guy, solid. He's been an all-star before. He's been fairly consistent. Go throw some money at him. Why not get another righty in his pen who's got some really, really nasty stuff? And I think that might be my option at this point. Unless you want to go get Trevor Rosenthal or bring Ian Kennedy home, then I think that might be the move. Or Archie Bradley. That might be interesting. But yeah, I think Corey Knable, a free agent signing. But if you're looking for internal, then it's probably going to be Joe Barlow. But that is all the questions we have today. Thank y'all so much for sending those in. I'll be doing a weekly mailbag from now until, mid-February when we start going back up to 5 episodes a week. I might still end up doing a weekly mailbag, just making it a revolving thing. But thank y'all so much for listening and subscribing. For your next listen, check out Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia. He is going deep on MLB stars of tomorrow. It is free and available wherever you get your podcast. Thank y'all so much for listening and subscribing. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.